we been dealing with evil? Narcissists can tilt the scale on the evil level that they can be. Every day I hear the stories, and there's no question in my mind that they are dealing with evil. But why are so many victims not believed when they present themselves with these crazy stories? Why is it that the burden of proof that they are evil goes on to the victim and re-injures the victim because they aren't believed? My name is Tracy Malone, and I am the founder of NarcissistAbuseSupport.com. I'm a NARC educator and a coach. And if you're watching me on YouTube, you can also watch and listen to my podcast all over wherever you get podcasts. Today, I'm honored to speak with Sherry Heller. She's a therapist from New York City, and she has an article that she wrote for my website that is called The Collective Denial of Evil and Its Impact on the Psychiatric Treatment That Victims Get. So let's hear what she says about evil, and you decide, have you been dealing with evil? Let's look at this together. Let's welcome her. Welcome, Sherry. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure, Tracy. It's great to be here.
I first came across your article, The Collective Denial of Evil and Its Impact on the Psychiatric Treatment. And when I read it, literally the blood like flowed out of my body. Mm-hmm. It just came so close to home that like it horrified me. It was like in Harry Potter where, you know, the Dementors come and suck the soul out. That was me. I was like sitting there and I'm like, oh my God, there is evil out there. And we are in such a denial about this. So when victims are, you know, met with this sort of evil, how does it manifest in a therapy way? What mistakes have you seen where they've come to you and gone to a therapist that doesn't really understand that there is evil out there?
Yeah. Well, you know, evil is always cloaked in virtue. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have very kind of mythic ideas of what evil should look like. But when we talk about people who are on the malignant end of the spectrum of narcissism, psychopaths, sociopaths, they know how to maneuver to create cognitive dissonance, to confuse, to baffle, to virtue signal, to seem beneficent, to seem generous. And because we're predisposed to want to believe the best in people, and even clinicians, which is really still astounding to me, want to believe that even the most heinous abuse can't possibly be calculated, can't possibly be deliberate. You know, that somehow there must be some goodness in this person. So often people who come in, they are prematurely encouraged to, you know, reconsider their perceptions before there is a full understanding of gaslighting, you know, and of the entire narrative of what happened. You know, because a narcissist always starts out very, seemingly very virtuous. They know how to read people because that's how they glean supply. And so they maneuver in a way where they become exactly what they believe you want from another, right? They fit a mold, and that's how they pull you in. It's part of the seduction and the love bombing. And when they're ready to assert dominion, because narcissists need to be in control, that's when they start to play games. That's when they start to psychologically toy with their victim, with their target. And a lot of people who come into therapy, they're starting to question what's happening. And they find that they're not believed. They have what's called Cassandra syndrome. And Cassandra was a Greek goddess who was given the gift of prophecy by Apollo. And when he tried to rape her and she resisted him, he punished her by giving her the gift of prophecy, but no one would ever believe it. No one would ever believe her truth. And she went mad. So often Cassandra syndrome is a psychological term referred to those who are victims of narcissistic abuse trauma. because they're typically not believed. So, I mean, my intention of writing that article was to really amplify, especially for clinicians, the how imperative it is that we begin to see evil in the human condition, that there are people who are malignant, who have, as Herbie Cleckley, the psychiatrist who coined the term psychopath, said they have a neuropsychiatric defect. They have a different brain structure than the normal population. They don't have empathy. And in fact, they're driven to destroy. And there is nothing about that that is just kind of misguided. It's very deliberate. Mm-hmm. And it's very calculated. So, you know, we have to really align with these victims and know that they're in danger.
Yes. Yeah. And I see a percentage. I know narcissisms, you know, psychopath and sociopaths are on a spectrum. But what I find is a percentage that really reach this evil state. This horrific, they're going to do everything they possibly can to weaken the target,
yeah,
and to make them think they're crazy. And it's repetition that is slowly driving them to madness, if you would, not mm-hmm. true madness, like a psychopath, but where they aren't believed, where they go to a therapist and the therapist is saying, oh, why don't we just try to get along?
And, yeah.
You know, to me, that just makes my entire skin crawl when they're directed to go back to their husbands and try to work things out, because he can't really be as evil as you say. Mm-hmm. And for a therapist to be saying something like that, it is further damaging the victim.
Yes. I wrote another article about why it's contraindicated to do couples therapy with a narcissist. And I wrote it on the heels of a woman I was treating who was maintaining no contact from a man she was involved with, who at one point beat her so badly she lived in a car for about 2 months. And she played recordings to me that were absolutely just chilling. You know, he was stalking her, and yet she's married to him. Mm-hmm. She left treatment. She reconnected with him. They did work together, I say that euphemistically, and they're in the public eye. So I kind of see this very strange depiction of their relationship. And it's almost crazy making for me, because then I wonder wait a second. The information I had was so blatantly clear. This guy was an unrepentant abuser. Is someone who was just so, I knew in the public eye he had this very charming persona, but it does make you doubt your own perceptions, because then you see this other version of reality and you have to ask yourself, what's real? You know, and that's why it's so imperative that we begin to see beyond this kind of fictional narrative, that we see to the truth. We see that you have to look at intention, don't look at behavior. Mm-hmm. Really look what's behind it, you know, and to see into a person's spirit, to see what's the agenda here? You know, what are they really trying to get at? I mean, what the narcissist wants is complete control. They want to, and ultimately they do want to diminish the other, because they're completely envious of the light that they want to usurp.
Mm, yeah.
So you have to see, I look at how deteriorated the person is. When I see a person's deterioration, rather than pathologize them, I have to ask myself, how did they become this way? You know, I hear that, you know, on the one hand, the narcissist can look so stable. I had a couple where the narcissist seemed so centered, and the wife was so frayed and frazzled and discombobulated. It didn't take too long to discern, like, oh, of course, he's a covert narcissist. He's not interested in doing any of the work. He hasn't read any of the books I've assigned. He doesn't show up for sessions. He is this kind of perennial innocent. That's also a huge facade. You know, I just didn't know. And, you know, it's, And then it became very evident what was happening, and she left him. Of course, he broke up with her through email. He ended their marriage through email. And then when she said, good, you know, go fuck yourself, I'm leaving. And then he's like, how could you do this to me? And she became the perpetrator, but she had already gotten to a point where she understood what was happening. But again, if she was working with a therapist who was not questioning, you know, some of these inconsistencies, some of the discrepancies, then the likelihood would be that she would be encouraged to try to somehow compromise, you know, and make concessions that would be self-annihilating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The level of evil to which they will go to destroy someone is overwhelming. I read an article this morning, you know, Ireland has the coercive control laws now, and effective this morning, or when this article came out this morning, they have now put the first person in jail for coercive control.
And wow.
This person like harassed his victim, his ex-wife, 5,700 times, death threats in 30 days. Is that the mark that it takes to get there?
Right, right.
How much do you have to do? I mean, do you actually have to go murder them before they're going to see this? There's a level.
Well, that's blatant. I mean, see, and that's, yeah, because it has to become that blatant before it's seen as destructive, yeah. You know, and most narcissists are kind of more stealth. They seem to have more nuance, so they're not going to, I mean, this is someone who obviously was so overtly enraged and impulsive. I'm sure that, because he was losing control, and I'm sure when they were together, he probably operated in a much more stealth way, I would think. Who knows? But yes, I mean, I just wrote an article about different, when rape doesn't look like rape, and there is something called rape by deception. And I think a lot of women who get involved with narcissists feel raped in the aftermath, because how could you consent to something when you don't know what's real? How could you consent to someone when you're being lied to? Right. You know, often narcissists will have double identities. They don't necessarily completely, you don't know what their marital status is. They're usually somatic narcissists who are sex addicts, will be with a million other people, you know. Who would knowingly walk into that situation and accommodate that? So there are some states actually where rape by deception is a crime. But of course, how could you prosecute it?
I have a friend who I'm on a committee for, it's the consent is her thing, is the legal definition of consent. If you don't know who the person really is, or they've lied to you, then how could you possibly consent? And so she's been changing the laws. So those states that have done it, she's actually in New York, and she's been spurring that to go on and to change it in every state, because it's going to set a baseline that can mm-hmm. be judged against. Without that, we just have a word that is consent, and there's no of it. So, you know, that's something we need to look at. You know, when victims, I want to talk about evil one more time, and just kind of back to it, just to the explanation of it, because, mm-hmm. you know, we've got such a spectrum here. Where does evil fall? Where is it? Is it the absence of good? What is it that takes it from like a crappy, shitty person to evil?
Well, we all have the potential for evil, right? We have higher impulses. We could be altruistic. We can love. We could be generous. But we also have lower impulses. We're greedy. You know, we want what we want. We can be demanding, you know. So we all have the potential. Where we fall in the realm of evil is dependent really on our moral development. And our sense of humanity and our ability to be empathic. So people who are narcissistic lack empathy. So there is an absence of goodness, right? There's an inability to really have a conscience, to care. In fact, often narcissists really feel most alive when they're sadistic, you know, when they get to harm another. So that's when we talk about evil, when we're going into a realm of moral depravity, where there's no sense of right or wrong. There's no real gauge to determine what is, not just what looks like, what is falls within the realm of morality, but what feels amoral, right? Like when you or I, if we do something that we regret, it weighs on us. You know, we may need to, we're repentant, we may need to want to make amends to a person. That's not within the scope of reality for a narcissist. When they harm another, it is the trajectory to further harm, right? It's, there's an agenda there. It's a strategy to further diminish, to tear the person down, to control them, whether they have to use a smear campaign or then they start having the flying monkeys, getting people to help enable, you know, to assassinate the person's character under the guise of being, of caring for them, you know, wanting the best for them. Meanwhile, what they're doing is backstabbing them, stigmatizing them, pathologizing them, and getting people on board.
So what does someone do if they're encountering this evil?
Well, you know, a lot of my clients say YouTube, your videos, you know, save them, not therapists, which is really sad. Most people came to me because they had to do their own research. They go online, they look for books, they try to figure out what the hell is happening here. How did my world fall apart? You know, pain is a great motivator. Usually people get to a point where they just feel they have to stop suffering. So they will either try to reach out, and to my chagrin, often they reach out to therapists who are not able to help them adequately, who don't really see what's happening. They can't assess the terrain. But usually, you know, it's that saying, knowledge is power. When they begin to get knowledge, they read, you know, material on your website, they go to various books, The Wizard of Oz, Another Narcissist, Seven Deadly Sins, all these great books, Craig Malkin. Something, you know, kicks in. They begin to come out of the fog a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that's sometimes all they need to, on that trajectory. And that's when people start on that path. Yeah. They can't stop. I mean, because suddenly they feel like they have a sense of reality again.
Mm-hmm. And they become detectives in this journey, right? They're just feverishly sopping up everything they can to learn, could this possibly be? And then they're sort of in denial. No. And then they go, oh, I see that in action. So once they learn the word gaslighting, then all of a sudden it gets done to them and that light bulb goes off. So reading about that and learning about that has put them in a place to go, oh my gosh, that's what's happening right now. And it helps them gain strength. It helps them kind of get angry, because I think anger projects them into getting some serious help. You know, they can see and go, this isn't fair. And I want to get better. Now they have the words for it. And the anger propels them.
Yes.
To step up and go, help me, what the hell is happening here?
Yeah, the anger is so critical. I work a lot with, particularly with women in anger, but men too. I mean, men have, I think, more access to their anger. It's more culturally sanctioned for men, mm-hmm. I think, to be in touch with their aggression. But I always say the foundation of anger, you know, that is the path to power. And to reclaim power, you have to be able to get back into that instinctual place. Because your aggression is an indicator of you're threatened. Your life is being threatened. You're in danger. And you can't, you know, the discrepancy between what you feel in your body physiologically and what's going on in terms of the brainwashing, that's where so much of the work is, mm-hmm. you know, in dismantling the indoctrination, the brainwashing, to see the truth, to get to the truth.
Yeah. you've been doing this for a while.
Yeah.
You know, being a therapist. Do you see an increase in this sort of, I don't know, is it the people that are coming for help because they've got all these resources to read books and to find YouTubes? Or is it that our society is like completely off the rails? Because people ask me that all the time. You know, my Facebook group is getting 100 people applying every single day.
Yeah.
And it's just like, we can't keep the revolving door any faster. It's to me, I see it, you know, going up so fast.
Yeah.
Have you witnessed that sort of thing?
Yeah. I think it is because there's much more a wealth of information that's available to people. I mean, when Malkin came out with the term echoism, it kind of coincided, I believe, around when Dr. Judith Herman coined the term complex trauma. There wasn't even a language for this, really. So now there's a wealth of information. We're also in an age of lunacy. A lot of people come in and they're very concerned about the political landscape, what's going on globally. There's a lot of mixed messaging. There's a lot of confusion. And so that plays a role. I certainly feel that there is more awareness, you know, and I see an increase in people coming in who not only suspect that something's off, they're able to name narcissistic abuse, especially maternal narcissism. I'm getting a lot of that. And I just did the training that Dr. Carol McBride offers therapists. And so I'm getting a lot of people coming in who were daughters of mothers who are on the spectrum. And that's really also very perplexing for people because of the way that we preserve the archetype of the mother as being kind of the bastion of love and nurturance and generosity. And now there's this documentary out by Daryl Hammond, who is from SNL, Saturday Night Live, who's a comedian, who was just besieged by mental illness, addiction, in and out of mental hospitals until he finally encountered a psychiatrist who was able to name the source of his torment as being his mother, who was a maternal narcissist.
Wow.
Who tortured him throughout his childhood. And he's stabilizing now. And he did this documentary called Cracked. I think that the heightened awareness has a lot to do with it. And I think the political landscape too. I think that there's a lot of fear. People are coming in and talking much more about their fears of what's happening in the world more than ever. And the endemic narcissism that we see, our leaders are rife with narcissism throughout the world. And that's a whole other thing too, about what you were saying, you had shared with me about a therapist and who has views that differ from you and I, and Alice Miller, whose work I loved. She talks a lot about serial killers, and she writes a lot about Stalin and Hitler and Mao Zedong, and her premise is that these psychopaths all had histories of child abuse. Now that may be true, you know, but I maintain that is not cause and effect. You know, I have clients who have some of the most unbelievably brutal histories who are kind and caring human beings. Mm-hmm. So you can't just make a statement that a narcissist was tormented as a child. Mm-hmm. You know, we're dealing with, there is a neuropsychiatric defect. There is something different about the narcissist. And we have to own that. We have to really accept that you can't just attribute it to environment.
No,
it's bigger than that.
I had a narcissistic mother. You know, mm-hmm. I had as much trauma as some of the narcissistic people.
Yeah.
I believe both my sisters went that direction as a defense mechanism to her actions. But I don't think that you know, here's a stamp, boom.
Okay, yeah.
You got childhood trauma, now we understand. Still freaking evil, right? They're still bringing in to hurt people, like with the intent to hurt. is where we cross the line. And right. You know, you were talking about how the awareness and the education has just amplified.
Yeah.
And that's usually with the victims, right? Would I have 200 books on all my shelves around here if I hadn't been abused and trying to figure it out and
right.
mythicize the whole thing? No. But if we're the ones doing the work, why aren't jumping into this wagon to go, you know, let me look at this thing. There's a lot of people coming in my office. Maybe I should research more. And to be fair, there are a lot of great and wonderful people like yourself out there that are doing good work. But you and I both know that we hear the stories of the ones who got away and from a therapist that was just not quite there. My therapist that had seen me for 4 years through my divorce and then 3 years through my horrific boyfriend that had me arrested. At the end, when I learned about it, he said they like to look in the mirror. And I was like, oh, wait a second. No. So 7 years of therapy was in very many ways, while it certainly was good to have someone to talk to and vent to when cray cray happened, I could have been on a path 7 years ago learning about this that would have alleviated me from having the worst abusive relationship.
Yeah.
He led me into it by his naivety.
Yeah. You know, I think we scoff at human evil because it's overwhelming. And I mean, I know, like I was sharing with you, I went on vacation and I really realized how much I have to get back into my meditation routine. When you have to deal with these stories as a trauma therapist, I leave sometimes my office and I feel like I'm in a dissociated state. I have to get myself grounded. I have to remind myself, okay, I'm safe. You know, when I was in Sedona and I felt like I was going through the psycho-spiritual detox, I was just like filled with anxiety that was pouring out of me. Like all the stories I hear of trauma, of rape, of psychological abuse, the concealment, the just driven to addiction, driven to like just financial ruin. I mean, everything you could possibly imagine. And to carry that, you have to really be focused on self-care. You have to be willing to take that on. And I think a lot of therapists want to be helpers and really are very sincerely, you know, motivated to want to focus on healing and the idea of holding a space for that level of trauma, also dealing with the homicidal rage that comes up in victims once they really kind of break through any illusions they have. It requires a level of presence. I think that not all people want to take on. You know, you have to focus on your own self-care. You have to be in your own therapy. You have to examine your own history. So, you know, it's very comprehensive, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that's why I always tell people if I have to refer out, because I do get so many referrals right now, I say you have to work with a trauma therapist. You must work with someone who understands this specific kind of trauma. And so I often, you know, will have to help them to find their way to someone. Mm. Because I know what the inclination is.
Yeah.
You try to, let's assuage, let's make things seem better than they are. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to help. That's not going to foster healing.
No. I think later on we find compassion to move forward or release. But I don't think a therapist that goes, oh, why don't you just go home and make nice? And I've heard it, you've heard it, it's heart-wrenching. And as you were describing the therapist that isn't taking this sort of thing on, because it is. I have seen, you know, over the last few years, it took a lot of training for me to be able to listen to 30 people tell me stories and just, you know, how not to take that on.
Yeah. So
it is a challenge, and it does take a lot of work. It reminded me of, I've ever been to a massage therapist that literally goes, swoop, 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 one down, one over, one over. It's like, it's a robot, right? It's not like, oh my God, you found the spot. Oh no, I have to go to one, two.
Right. It's intuitive, yeah.
Exactly, so it becomes something where they have heard the stories, they know how to help people, they know how to give them tools to help themselves. And I think that is such a different animal than when you're dealing with a non-evil psychopath, narcissist, sociopath. You know, the cluster Bs are inherently at their core doing a lot of damage to people. A normal therapist is going to put them in the bucket of, oh, it's just another marriage.
They're mentally ill, or why can't you foster compassion and, you know, just focus on, you know, living your life. And it doesn't work like that, because when you're a target, it's not a matter of having healthy detachment or erecting boundaries. Right. When someone is on a mission to destroy you, you can't just deflect. You know, I mean, you want to help the person to look at, and I do work with complex trauma. So I work with people largely who come from families where there's narcissistic abuse, and they have to look at how they were groomed to be supply. I was groomed to be supply in my family of origin. So to dismantle that, I really had to do tremendous work, extensive work. And it's very difficult, because then you have to face, I don't have a self beyond being a narcissistic extension. Who am I? Mm-hmm. You know, and having to cultivate a sense of self. I have a woman I'm working with now who really talked about this in her session yesterday, and it's extremely debilitating, because it's an empty feeling inside when you never have a mirror. Mm-hmm. You know, and in fact, you've become the mirror. You've become this tool, you know, for your parents. So there's so much to reclaim.
So much. And, you know, your work is helping so many people. And I'm going to suggest, I'll put the link down below for everybody to go and download this article from my website. It's like nothing I've ever read before, but it is something that we really need to look at. We need to understand that there is evil out there, and what you are dealing with could very well be evil people. This is something that you're going to have to do the detective work and find the resources, because they're out there. And denying that there's evil, and you know, there's a religious aspect that can come into this, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, turn the other cheek, and you know, la la la, forgive and forget, and all of those pieces that come in and become another barrier for people to recover, you know, especially if they're religious and spiritual, they don't want to believe there's evil.
Well, I'm an interfaith minister, so I certainly have a spiritual life.
Wow.
Right. Being spiritual, I do not denounce darkness. I think that's materialism, spiritual materialism. So I think it is important to think holistically.
Yeah. So tell us where people can find out more about you, because you have a website, and let's just hear how they can find more about you.
Well, the best way to reach me is through my website. It's sherritherapist.com, and I spell my name S-H-E-R-I, and therapist, it's one word. And I have a private practice in New York City. And basically everything is linked on my site. I have a lot of articles that I've written that have been published. Many that are inclusive of narcissistic abuse syndrome. Some that deviate from that, talk about other forms of mental illness and other issues. But I think that's the best way to reach me.
Okay. Well, we'll put the link down below. And thank you so much for joining me today. This has been an amazing journey to learn about, dig more into, and I'm going to use this resource to ship out to as many of my people so that they don't feel so alone.
When you
realize that there's something bigger than what you think is going on here, it does give them just that little bit of peace and comfort to know, I was dealing with evil. Oh my. So thank you so much for being here today.
And Tracy, my pleasure.
Wasn't she great? I love that woman. She is so smart, so talented, and she does really great work. Understanding that evil exists may help you put the pieces of this all together. So I'm going to put a link to her article. It's about 4 pages long. It's a great article. It's going to help you see. She's got lots of citations and quotes from other books and authors that have set the stage for this for years and years. This is not a new concept. So if you're interested in learning more, there'll be a link down below. Visit my website. If you're struggling with narcissistic abuse, you can read Sherry's article and check out all of the information that I have for you and find out how to work with her or I going forward. We believe you, and we know that evil exists. This is Tracy Malone. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to subscribe, and I'll see you again next time. Thank you.